by the powers vested in me by the Federal Communications Commission, I command you to get on the microphone in a serious manner and continue this broadcast.
Alrighty then! That was weird, huh? Welcome back to Cairo Nights, everybody. I'm Spike O'Neill, the man who would not leave.
Are we letting you leave at this point?
Yeah, I can.
Okay.
I'm free to
roll. I thought maybe we just confine you to the downstairs until the next show.
Actually, you know what? Frank Summerall's with us tonight. It's movie night at Cairo Nights. I love movie nights. Matt Butler is on the information desk, the news desk tonight. And Kevin Deers is at the board. And I want to just first off say, Kevin, thank you for not starting me with ear-splitting metal. I know your pension is to play as much metal as you can get on the air here at Cairo.
Slayer is for tomorrow, sorry.
I can't wait.
Yeah.
Good, it'll wake you up, though.
Yeah, this isn't coffee. This is actually it's called Throat Coat. And that's not the name of a pending project with, I'm sorry, God, see how dangerous it is when I don't sleep? No, it's actually it's a throat remedy that singers use. It's, you know, zinc and other natural things to help a sore throat. And there's honey in here. And there's no caffeine in here.
Okay.
That was the three Red Bulls I chugged before we went on the air.
Perfect.
So I should be fine. And then just crash like a brick sometime later tonight. That blew me.
Yeah, that would also help. Yeah, I was going to say, if the listening audience at any point hears a very loud thud coming from out of their speakers, that just means Spike O'Neill's passed out at the concert.
That's my body hitting the board. He gave it his all. He left it all on the field. Frank Summerall's here from MyNorthwest.com, and we talk in movies. So I love talking movies with Frank. And there's something I want to ask you about. Is the superhero genre, are we getting fatigued? And I ask this because, you know, Shazam 2 was a bomb. Black Adam didn't do well. Some people say that was due in large part to Dwayne Johnson himself and not the script or the movie itself.
Internal self-sabotage almost.
Okay. Have we had our fill of superhero movies?
Oh, yeah. I really think so. Now, the people who are fans of this, let me address my bias. I'm not a big superhero guy.
Okay.
I think those who have listened have gotten that pretty clearly at this point.
You got this thing about good writing. I don't know why you won't get off your high horse about good writing.
You know, I like the Christopher Nolan ones. You know, there's definitely stuff I do like. But with the – there's just – right now, because there's the two big – corporations. It's Marvel and DC. And right now they're in a race of who can have the most embarrassing headline.
Oh.
Because Marvel has now fired this one exec because they had months and months of allegations of horrible mistreatment towards their visual effects team.
Oh, wow.
Right. They're rushing them on deadlines. That's why these movies are looking sloppier and lazier every time. And so then they fire this lady. Her name is Victoria Alonso. By the way, a producer of Argentina 1985,
wow.
Oscar-nominated documentary from this year.
But she went that Marvel money.
And
God, I love it.
What's really funny is the way they wrote the press release about it. They were trying to say, like, single-handedly, she was the cause of this. And now it's all gone. It's
right.
All gone. We're all fine now. And it's like that. I think Marvel, which is worth $25 billion, had more than one voice causing a toxic workplace. So I thought that was really ironic. And then DC, on the other hand, is just falling apart. They have new management. There's all these internal fighting. And now there's all these quotes. There's a director that I wrote out here where when Shazam was rumored to be a bomb, he was like, it's not like this comes as a surprise. I'll be all right, though. I got paid up front.
Ouch.
You don't want your director to say that before your movie comes out.
No, I don't care. Who cares about the people in the seats? I got paid.
You know, and so I do feel like there is a fatigue. Absolutely. And the people who are holding on to the superhero movies, there are bigger ones coming out this year, and maybe those will be successes. But I do think we just got to dial it back. Moderation is important in everything, including this.
So, but here's the problem. You've made it clear very well. You've very well spoken about how money drives everything. Every decision is made based on the risk of the project, the cost of the project, and superhero movies, they bring in box office.
Yeah, there's it feels like when you talk about the middle class and how it's disappearing, you can almost use that for films as well. Because there are the huge, big box office movies that are costing not $100 million, but $300 million, $400 million. And then you have the movies that are costing $1.5 million and they make $3.5 million. And right. those are the movies that generally the Oscars look at. But the middleman is completely gone at this point.
Okay.
And now it feels like with these superhero movies getting more and more bloated, and that we're getting 6 a year, 8 a year yeah. with these monster box office potential,
right.
that it's just becoming empty. It's becoming a shell of itself almost in a sense.
Well, of the top 8 grossing movies last year, 4 were superhero movies.
Black
Panther, Doctor Strange, Batman. Yeah, yeah. Seriously, somebody else got a chance.
Avatar got in there, which is a sequel, but I give that a little more credit. That's a creative sequel from James Cameron. Top Gun's in there.
Well, yeah, it was the other 4 of the top 8 are Top Gun, sequel, Avatar, sequel, Jurassic World, trequel, and Minions, third edition of Minions. Yeah, not an original thought in the top grossers. So that being said, how do we get original movies made? We had some great original type stories made this year, mm-hmm. right? At least not from box office representation, but from Oscar representation. So, you know, things like Everything Everywhere All at Once wasn't a real expensive movie to make.
And you saw that now, right?
I did see that now.
Want to share your thoughts?
You know what? Here's my thoughts on Everything Everywhere All at Once. It was enjoyable. Mm-hmm. I don't know that if it was everything to be mm-hmm. to pun the Oscars. It wasn't like Oscar sweeping good. I expected too much after 7 Oscars. But there's a psychological thing where people like to be the odd duck. They want to be the outlier. I've talked to more people who say they don't like that movie since it won all those Oscars.
And that's funny. Not to always talk about the Oscars on the show, but usually when you win the top prize and then there's the big zag that comes.
Yes.
And so sometimes I was such a huge Power of the Dog fan last year, and when that got dunked on by Coda and I was upset, and then I was realizing, well, hold on now. That movie won 1 Oscar for Best Director, and that was it. The only other movie to ever do that was The Graduate, and that movie's never going to die. It's an all-timer.
Quality
not
stands
a bad,
up. Yeah.
Not a bad group to be in. So sometimes it feels like when you lose, you get to age better. But that's just how our toxic culture is at this point.
Let me ask you something else about movie and culture. That's a great segue. So Rachel Zegler was in West Side Story, the new West Side Story remake.
She's great.
And she has landed a role, in Shazam, Fury of the Gods, which even though 2 was a bomb, Shazam 3 has already been being made.
Is that right?
Yeah, oh my Shazam God. 3, right? Sure, Shazam, Fury of the Gods. Fury of the Gods, was that 2? Was Fury of the Gods 2?
No. Yeah, I think
so. Was it?
I don't know.
I think it's 3.
Okay.
Oh, anyway, Rachel Zegler is going to be a live action Snow White.
Yes, that's coming out. That's next year.
Yes. And given the fact that we just had Halle Bailey premiere their trailer at the Oscars about The Little Mermaid, mm-hmm. who's a girl of color, mm-hmm. I have seen more people, and it's on social media, so I weigh that with a grain of salt, but they are chastising Disney for the need to remake classics with ethnic flavor. Mm-hmm. For lack of a more, you know, politically correct way to say that. You know, oh, it's so woke. It is so, I think, so great to be inclusive so that little girls, because there's little girls of all stripes in this world, and for them to see a princess that looks like them, I think is wonderful. You think that's why, I'm asking just for your opinion, you think that's why Disney is doing this, to realize that their audience is so diverse?
I think that's a really good defense of these live-action remakes, because I always wonder, 10 years from now, what are you revisiting? The live action Lion King, or are you going to revisit the 1997 cartoon? Like, most likely the cartoon, I think.
I think you're spot on. Like, or Beauty and the Beast. I love Emma Watson, but why bother?
Right. I'm going to watch the cartoon at this point. So it feels like they have such a short shelf life.
Yes.
So I think that's a really great defense of them is, hey, you know what? Disney has a history of a lot of white characters. Let's change it up. And I have no problem with that. Like, yeah. Little Mermaid doesn't need to be a white character. Snow White doesn't need to be a white character. A lot of these stories, which come from Hans Christian Andersen, or Grimm's brothers.
Brothers Grimm,
They come from various areas, you know? They're not all Anglo-Saxon.
They were all European, though, right? Most of those were
Hans Christian Andersen in particular,
and Brothers Grimm. Yeah, I hear you. Anyway, so it's just a thought, especially when I saw Rachel Zegler being penned as Snow White.
Yeah.
I think it's a Latin origin female playing Snow White. I think it's fantastic.
Yeah. No, I think it is great. And it's funny you bring her up, because she had a funny quote about Shazam when it's coming out, because she said, when she was coming up as an actor during the pandemic, and the West Side Story was kind of under wraps, like was a little secretive. I think the story was she auditioned for that for a year. It took a year to get that cast nailed down. Something really extensive like that. And she said, hey, I needed a job, so I took the Shazam gig.
Oh, okay.
And it's like, whoa, you know what? You probably shouldn't say that. But I feel like people are getting really honest about these superhero movies. And so, yeah, and she's now getting a lot of flack online, but I think she's going
to
be great.
For having said that, I was happy to have any job. And I took this one. I was so desperate for a job.
Yeah.
She's also going to be in the Hunger Games prequel, Ballads of Songbirds and Snakes.
Are you a Hunger Games guy?
You know, I was a Hunger Games guy, but mostly because I really enjoyed Jennifer Lawrence.
Yeah.
I thought for a young actress at the time when the first Hunger Games movie came out, she hadn't done very much. And they built a franchise around her.
So that's 2011, and I think Silver Linings Playbook is the next year. And then that was, boom, Jennifer Lawrence is our big star.
And she was everywhere, yeah.
And speaking of which, it's sorry, Lisa not being here, but she had – I saw Scream 6 over the weekend.
Think Lisa wants to weigh in on that?
No, I don't think she wants to weigh in on
you?
That. There's a lot of knife stabs for Lisa in that one. But there was a trailer for a Jennifer Lawrence romantic comedy – and that got more laughs and attention than anything in Scream 6. Not that Scream 6 wasn't a fun time.
Right.
But the audience was so engaged on this short Jennifer Lawrence trailer for this rom-com. So maybe she's having a little bit of a comeback.
I've seen – what is this – what's that called? Do you remember? Whatever It Takes or something like that?
It's something kind of cheeky like that.
I mean the premise of the movie is this rich couple has a son who's a total nerd and they – pay her to date him, air quote, date him, and
he's
kind of bring him out of his shell.
They're bringing in like that modern, like he's an incel, he's online all the time,
right.
He's not socializing, and so
video
she's
gamer,
getting, and so the parents are worried that he's not having the childhood that they thought they would want him to have, or their own similar childhood because different generations. But
don't worry about the title. I'm sure it's going to be a huge hit.
But that'd be great. That'd be great. And what I'm glad to see is, with this superhero zag, that there's room for other movies to take its spot. Because I'm always going to root for Top Gun Maverick to be more successful than the 16th Iron Man movie, right?
Okay.
Like, I'm always going to root for that, even if Top Gun Maverick is its own sequel, and even if it has Tom Cruise and his big old ego.
I actually got to see that finally.
Oh.
It was okay.
Yeah, it's all right.
Did it get an Oscar nomination for like a screenplay?
Yeah.
Adapted screenplay?
Yeah.
Really?
It really did.
Really?
It
really
did. The Academy.
So you're talking about all these different Iron Mans and all these different Thors and whatnot. What about fourth John Wick? Oh, yeah. That's going to be awesome.
I'm okay with that. The thing is, I'm so distracted because I'm really sad about Lance Riddick's passing. I thought he was great character actor.
What a legend.
He just kind of pops up anywhere. And he was one of those guys that just is a scene stealer.
Yeah.
Where he just had such precision in the way he delivered his lines that you were so magnetized by it. And I wrote a little note about him that we could talk about briefly. But he died at 60. And
wow. Oh.
Everyone was thinking he was one of the healthiest guys at age 60. So it was an incredible shock. But guess what? J.K. Simmons became Fletcher at age 60. And it makes me sad because Lance Reddick definitely could have done something similar and had this huge second wave because he's always been a TV actor. He was in Oz. He was in The Wire.
Yeah.
Now he's in the John Wick movies. R.I.P. Lance Reddick. He was great.
Yep.
He was great.
Hey, let me ask you about this. There's the new Ben Affleck movie, Air, the story of how Air Jordans came to be. It's a Ben Affleck, Matt Damon movie. Got a perfect score on Rotten Tomatoes.
Yeah. Early reviews, early returns. But once again, if we're talking about the superhero zag, when these superhero movies aren't doing well, that gives you room for these movies. Now, I was super pessimistic about Air because it's this corporate movie about a bunch of white guys in suits trying to figure out how to make money. And they're like, hey, Michael Jordan's over there.
Well, no. Well, from what I'm seeing of this, it's like Nike was floundering.
Right.
And somebody said, hey, there's this kid who's really hadn't done anything yet. Jordan wasn't even in the NBA yet.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, this guy is going to launch, going to save Nike and launch Air Jordan. And it's going to be massive.
But I'm hearing great things about it because there's this, I don't know if you guys remember when The Social Network was rumored and it was becoming a thing and it had a trailer.
Yeah.
But everyone was kind of like, really, a Facebook movie? How's this going to work? Yeah. And now it's considered one of the best movies of the 2010s. It's undeniably great. And this movie is getting similar traction to a Social Network, a Moneyball, where it has kind of a boring corporate background, and it really is engaging with a bunch of colorful characters. I always love Jason Bateman.
Yes.
Viola Davis as Michael Jordan's mom is going to be amazing.
I was about to say, it's the cast.
Yeah.
I mean, the cast brought the Social Network to life. That cast was fantastic.
And speaking of the cast, but two magnetic stars, and it's really fun to see them working together again, Matt Damon and Ben Affleck.
And have they done something that I missed since Good Will Hunting? I mean, they kind of went their separate ways, right?
Yeah, they did. Well, because Ben Affleck kind of had a cultural zag when he was floundering in the mid-2000s. And
with
at that point,
games and whatnot.
And then, like, there's a Christmas movie he did. And then, meanwhile, Matt Damon was doing the Bourne movies and was biggest star.
They did Dogma.
Yes. So they did
Dogma. That's true.
And there's one more. They are actually co-wrote and were in The Last Duel, the Ridley Scott movie from...
Oh, that Last Duel, like 3 years ago, 2 years ago?
2 years ago.
Yeah, that's right.
And people just didn't pay attention to it, but they are both in there, and they were part of the script for it, so...
And Kevin Smith movies are an outlier.
I
love Kevin Smith movies. And Affleck, he started in Mallrats. He was the punk in Mallrats,
the punk
abusive boyfriend in Mallrats.
Because they have the Good Will Hunting 2 joke in one of the...
Go on to hunting season.
Yeah, hunting season. Right, yeah. Let's get the big shotgun.
So when we come back, there's a Hollywood duo that's making a pretty bold claim or a bold prediction for themselves. Mm-hmm. And I want to ask you what you think of that, because I think these guys are lost in their own imagination. But
I'm going to see if I can find an optimistic take.
we've talked about this, and you think I'm wrong.
I'm buying it.
It's Cairo Nights. I'm Spike O'Neill. Matt Butler's at the news desk. Frank Summerall with movies. Movie nights at Cairo Nights. Kevin Deere's on the board. That's right. It's an all-male review tonight, ladies. Drink it in. We'll be right back after these. Welcome back to Cairo Nights. I'm Spike O'Neill. Kevin Deers is on the board. That's because Matt Butler's on the news desk. Nice job, my friend.
Can't you tell?
Oh, yeah, I can tell. The news sounds fantastic. Oh, you mean your work. It's wonderful, Kev.
I was going to say more a case of desperate times call for desperate measures.
Hardly.
But you do, Spike.
Hardly. Frank Semmel's joining us. It's movie night here at Cairo Nights. And I mentioned last break that the Ben Affleck movie Air, which is a story of how Air Jordans came to be. It's funny, Ben Affleck was doing an interview with The Hollywood Reporter. He's like, look, this is not the Michael Jordan story. It's about how guys wanted to make a shoe. He said, if this was the Michael Jordan story, you know, we'd have to back the truck up to Michael Jordan to make his story. If his movie ever comes out, I'd love to see what that. He said nobody ever has had the influence on our culture like Michael Jordan had influence on our culture.
So much so that his documentary, The Last Dance,
about the Bulls? Yeah.
I mean, that I remember because I was right in the middle of the pandemic. We didn't have sports. Basketball was paused. And once a week, it was showing up on ESPN. And the morning sports guys were talking about the episode that morning. Like, everyone was frozen. Everyone stopped. And we're like, we're going to watch this. And they would crank out. It was 5 weeks because they did two episodes a week for the 10 episodes. So you're right. Absolutely. He did that with a 10-hour documentary, absolutely.
That was legit the one thing I was looking forward to during the pandemic. I had, I was home from work. I didn't have anything to do. It was like appointment television for me. I was arrested on my TV every time one of those episodes came in. It was awesome.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely incredible.
Peak so, pandemic viewing.
Peak. So this Air movie gets a perfect score on Rotten Tomatoes, and I got to admit that I don't know how that works. Can you give me kind of what Rotten Tomatoes – I know it's become the standard for how we review and rate movies because there's really no good – there's no good movie reviewers anymore. It used to be there were like Siskel and Ebert.
I know. R.P. Ebert.
Yeah.
Siskel too, I think, is passed now.
Yeah, I believe they're both gone.
Passed.
So how does Rotten Tomatoes work?
Rotten Tomatoes is a little strange. It's very simplified. So they have all these different film journalists for different outlets.
Different like, and, writing publications.
Right. So if we had like the Seattle Times, like film critic, gotcha. Maybe he's approved to be on Rotten Tomatoes and he would write his review in Expansive. But all Rotten Tomatoes wants is a yes or a no. Did you like it? Did you not? So when you see 100%, that just means everyone was like, yeah, it's good. I liked it. So, but they're not saying it's 100 out of 100.
Right. No, they say they had 12 reviewers and everybody liked it, so it got 100%.
Yeah. But that means there's a variation there. There's a gap where someone could be like, yeah, I liked it and love it. Where 10 people be like, I loved it. It's one of the best movies of the year.
Gotcha.
So there is that vague variation. And then they have their own little scales for if it hits 60% average, then it's good or something like that. But that's how they do it. And it's a little different from Metacritic, which actually like asks each reviewer to come up with a number 1 through 100, which I find is ridiculous. How can you go, this movie's a 72 and this movie's a 74?
Yeah. Well, okay. People are very pleased with themselves and their abilities at moments like that. So we mentioned Ben Affleck and Matt Damon mm-hmm. and their history of working together and their promise to work together in the future. Mm-hmm. And there's another Hollywood duo that's made a pretty bold assertion. It's the guys from Creed. From Creed 2, Creed 3, Michael B. Jordan and Jonathan Majors. Now, these guys presented together at the Oscars. Mm-hmm. They're a very talented duo.
And did a really great New York Times interview together. So okay. They're a tandem so far throughout all this.
Well, in that interview, they say they want to be they liken themselves to De Niro and Pacino. They want to have that kind of working relationship, making movies together.
Which is funny because those two actually never were in a movie until the 90s in Heat, right? And then you have the big diner scene where they're on screen together for the first time. So it's always an interesting comparison. But I understand what they're trying to say.
Let me correct you.
Oh.
Were they in Godfather 2 together?
Not together.
Not together, but
they're in the film together. Yeah, so you're right.
Because De Niro played the young Corleone and Michael, of course, Michael Al Pacino played Quay. So no, but you're right though. It was flashbacks mm-hmm. to De Niro.
They were
never had a scene
lines.
Together.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah,
okay. Yeah. Fair enough. So, but he was their first. But they're so intertwined.
Yeah.
Their reputations and their legacies, De Niro and Pacino. Are these two guys? I mean, I like them. I like their work, but I don't think they've done enough. A broad stroke of different type of performances to rate. That kind of – is that a lofty comparison or am I wrong?
It's 100% a lofty comparison. I'm optimistic. I like the intention. So I'm really excited that they have this goal because I think that's important. I'm worried that they're a little too tied to the superhero culture because Michael B. Jordan was doing a little bit of the Black Panther stuff and now he's separating. But Jonathan Majors is now going to be the new villain for the next – couple of years for Marvel. He's
okay.
Going to be the new big bad. So he's going to be busy with that, which I'm not crazy about. I think he could be doing a lot better stuff. But Jonathan Majors might be one of our best actors in 5 years.
Really?
Yeah. There's a film called The Last Black Man in San Francisco. Obviously, I'm biased because that's my hometown. It's incredible. Incredible movie. Incredible performance in him in it. He does The Five Bloods, which was a Spike Lee movie.
I saw that.
He's great in that. Yeah. Obviously, everyone's distracted by Delroy Lindo, and he should have been nominated for that movie. It was great to see Chadwick Boseman in The Five Bloods. But Jonathan Majors, you know, he's the kid, right? He's the son. He's holding his own against all these giants. And it's a complex, messy movie. I really enjoyed it. Thought he's great. And there's another film coming out that was just picked up, I think, by Searchlight. It's called Magazine Dreams. So right now, he's basically doing all these things where he looks like he's roided out of his mind with all this working out. He is Magazine Dreams is a film where he's a troubled bodybuilder and he is trying – he's about to be on like a magazine. He's going through this personal life as he's attempting to be like the next Arnold. It's a messy movie, I've heard, but supposedly he's amazing in it and I think the Oscars are going to jump on and give him a nomination. So he's got it. And I like Michael B. Jordan a lot, and I like who he works with. He works with Ryan Coogler, so that was like Fruitvale Station and things like that.
Okay.
So I like some of their choices, but it's very lofty. It's very lofty to go after two of what, the 10 greatest?
Yeah,
that's
easily.
Conservative to say.
But, you know, hey, it's if you're going to aim high. You know what I mean? If you're going to set goals for yourselves, hey, aim high.
So what I did, I want to help out Michael B. Jordan and Jonathan Majors because
okay.
I'm rooting for them.
Okay.
I'm rooting for them to do this. I got a blueprint. I went through. I was like, well, what made De Niro De Niro? So I laid out a couple of things I'm going to share with you guys. So De Niro was in 9 Best Picture nominees.
Okay.
As a prominent role. I think maybe you could throw in like Joker is like the 10th one because he's in it a little bit.
Yeah.
But like 9 prominent ones. He's nominated for an Oscar 7 times. And that's a combination of supporting and lead, which I think is important.
Yeah.
You need to know how to do the Leo lead and the Brad Pitt supporting.
Right.
You know? He's won twice, usually winning. It's kind of semantics because the Academy gets it wrong all the time. But 2 wins is really nice. It's hard to get more than 1. Consider it like a Super Bowl as a quarterback. Right?
Okay, fair enough.
He's got 2. As I wrote down, both iconic lead and supporting parts. He's worked with 4 iconic directors. Coppola, Scorsese, De Palma, Tarantino. That's De Niro. Throw in Michael Mann for fun.
Okay.
4 decades of iconic performances.
Yeah.
70s, 80s, 90s. Maybe if there wasn't one in the 2000s, but there was one in the 2010s. I really liked him in Silver Linings Playbook. You look at Pacino a little bit in a similar way. 7 Best Picture nominees. 9-time Oscar nominee. He won once. He worked with 6 iconic directors. Coppola, Lumet, De Palma, Warren Beatty, Tarantino, obviously, Christopher Nolan. He's about 3 decades of iconic performances, and they do a lot of different genres.
Right.
Al Pacino is sports, right?
Any
Given Sunday.
Any Given Sunday.
Crime. Courtroom.
Yep.
He's got a lot of different things. That's what you need to get to this threshold of the Denzels, the Tom Hanks.
Yep.
Even, let's say, Matt Damon and Ben Affleck, since that's a really fun pairing we're all excited about. That's kind of an outline. I'm trying to help these guys out. That's what you need
to
look at.
So they need to align themselves with great directors.
Great directors.
That's just as important as the talent they bring to the stage or the screen.
Lean into some different subgenres that they can really claim as their own. Like, wow, Michael B. Jordan was in the best sports movie of like the last 5 years. That's something you can hold on to.
Fair enough. Hey, can you hang out for a minute?
Yeah.
Because we were talking about the Last Dance. I want to talk, if you can, talk basketball when we come back.
Let's do it.
Oh, great. It's Kyra Knight, some Spike O'Neill, Frank Summerall's here. We'll be right back after these. There's the Kevin Deers I've come to know and love. Welcome back to Kyra Knights. I'm Spike O'Neill. Matt Butler's on the news desk tonight. Frank Summerall's here from MineNorthwest.com. Oh, sorry, Ken.
It's just Metallica, man. It's not too hardcore.
There's no such thing as just Metallica, my friend. There is either Metallica or there is not. There's no just Metallica.
All right, headbang break.
So Frank Summerall's here, and I know we love talking movies, but part of your expertise, I've come to understand, you're a big sports fan.
Yeah, we squeeze it in a little bit.
A little bit.
Yeah.
And I know this week that the mayor of Seattle said that he expects the NBA to come back to town within the next 5 years.
100%.
Adam Silver said that the NBA is planning to expand. There's a new TV deal being worked out. There's a new players agreement being worked out. It's the perfect time for expansion.
And a key piece for that to fall was the Suns being sold, because now we got a price tag.
There you go.
Now we know what these teams are worth in 2022, 2023.
And the speculation is probably that Vegas and Seattle would join the league simultaneously. But until then, many Sonic fans who still long for the NBA have embraced the Blazers.
Which was a real rivalry. It's on pause.
Oh, yeah.
It's on pause.
Yeah.
You know, since 2008 or so.
And Damian Lillard, the star of the Blazers, a NBA superstar, made a pretty bold statement that the NBA is not, he doesn't enjoy what the NBA has become. What do you think of that?
Yeah, he's been in the news, and I really like Damian Lillard. I think he has a really high approval rating. I think a lot of people like him. He's been very loyal to a small franchise. He's their greatest player. Sorry, Bill Walton and everyone else who's playing.
Yeah.
But he basically came out and said, this isn't the NBA that I came into. This rings culture, this toxic media about rings and all this. I know part of it is that he's defending his own legacy because he just hasn't gotten that far. But I definitely understand the point he's making, where you are at some point held hostage by the ownership of the team. You know, what helps Curry was when Bob Myers said, hey, you know what? Here's Durant.
Right.
Or when Bob Myers doesn't waste a second round pick and discovers a Draymond or nails a Klay Thompson pick, you know? And Damian Lillard never had that with Portland.
Right.
And this is what I think should happen. This is my plea. Because Lillard feels like he's ready to leave, but doesn't want to because he loves that team so much and he loves being there. I think Portland needs to be the villains. They need to be the bad guys, and they need to ship him out and just say, hey, sorry, Lillard. We know you want to. We know you want to play somewhere else and contend, but you know you want to stay here. We will make that decision for you and send you out. And that way, there is no bad blood about him forcing a trade because I don't think he'll ever want to do that. But man, do I want to see him compete. I'm so upset with what Portland's doing with him. He had career highs this year at age 32.
Well, it's funny. Some of the things he said in this article that I'm reading from Sports Illustrated. He says that, you know, this is not the NBA I came into. You know, I expected it to evolve. Everything is constantly changing in life, but I feel like I play for the love of the game. I want the competition. I want to know what it feels like to win. I want to see my teammates do well. I want to see my teammates get paid. I enjoy the bonding part of it. We spend more time with each other than anybody. But now that doesn't count. Regular seasons don't count. Get a ring. This guy's the MVP. This guy did that. Because that's what it's all about.
That's what it's all about. Which, of course, the NBA as a whole is having a problem with because no one's watching the regular season because
true.
This is how we're being told how to watch the sport is, hey, check out the playoffs and that's who matters. And unfortunately, not all teams are stacked up the same. Portland does not have the same advantages that the
Golden because
State
people
does.
Go chase that ring.
Yeah,
Gary Payton went and chased the ring in Miami. I mean, everybody goes and chases the ring. LeBron got a ring in Cleveland, at least first, before he left to chase more rings. But now nobody just stays with their team except for Damian Lillard.
He's a different time. Like, he's a 90s basketball player in the 2020s. And it's unfortunate because I really think he's special, and I hope he's remembered in the right way. And so I think Portland, he gave you an amazing season. Send him out. Send him out.
If he's going to be remembered,
you're
right.
Take all the assets back, and let's see what he can do in the second phase. Because he even said it. This team has a worse record than the Lakers. It has a mess of a season they've had, and they've had 51 combined games missed between LeBron and Anthony Davis. Wow. And they're still worse than the Lakers team. I mean, come on, Lillard. That's it. Let's call it that, man.
Well, you're right. The team's got to send him. They're going to be the bad guy for him.
He will never do it. He will never say it. He'll never force it. He's not going to do the Carmelo. He's not going to do the Durant or anything like that. They need to make that call for him. If they can let their egos go and be the bad guys, I think that's the right move.
Good call,
my friend. I think everyone in the NBA would be happy with it.
Skyro Knights. We'll be right back after these. Now to hear his play. I'm always there.